The Inside Aperture podcast introduces you to the experts who use Apple's professional image management application to organize, edit, and output their pictures. Each show features tips and techniques that will help you improve the quality of your photography and bring efficiency to your workflow.
I'm here with Senior Product Manager for Aperture, Joe Schur. And Joe, we're going to talk a little bit about customizing the user interface today.
Absolutely. I'm really glad we're talking about this, Derek, because I think it's really one of the big advantages that Aperture offers a professional photographer who's trying to create the ideal workflow. And there's a lot more in terms of what you can do to customize the Aperture interface than a lot of people realize.
Yeah, we were talking earlier, and it seems like there are two types of users that we run into a lot. One type, right away, they start kind of monkeying around with the user interface, just sort of seeing what everything can do. And then the other type, and I think, and I can relate to the second type, where they get so engulfed in learning the application and putting it to work and everything, never really take a time out to say, you know, I can make this interface look just about any way I want for just about any computer I want. Where should they start when they start looking at user interface customization?
Well, just to lay the groundwork for that, I would say that, first of all, understand why we created these options. So one of the things we discovered looking at the different way photographers were trying to work, getting through their workflow and going through this sort of capture-to-output process, was you don't really find too many photographers who agree completely on what the ideal setup, what the perfect sort of workspace for their particular style of working should be. And so our sort of philosophy going into Aperture and its design was to make this flexible enough that you can kind of create a workspace that makes sense to you. And what makes sense to one, you know, photographer is not going to work for the other. It's really cool to sometimes see a photographer configure Aperture in a way that I would have never imagined, but it just works for them, you know, to have things located the way they do. So there's a lot of flexibility, not only in terms of what you can hide and show, but also literally kind of where you put things geometrically on the screen. So you asked about some of those things. Let me just run through some of them. One of them is the ability to either swap or rotate the workspace. And what I mean by rotating the workspace is that instead of thumbnails running along the bottom of the screen, the browser being along the bottom of the screen, that's kind of how it comes out of the box, you can actually use the rotate workspace command to move those thumbnails to the side so they're on the left or the right. And you have to use the swap workspace command to move them from the left to the right. So you can swap and rotate to basically put the browser on the top, on the left, or the right, or the bottom. This actually works really well if you hide your project panel, since you already know what project you're in, and if you're not doing any adjustments or working with any metadata specifically, you can hide all of that panel. And if you just put side by side, say your thumbnails on the left and then your viewer on the right, you have a really nice, very clean, very non-distracting workspace. So just doing that makes really good use of your screen. And actually keeping those thumbnails on the side makes a lot of sense when you see how the screen real estate is actually used. So you can swap and rotate the workspace. That really helps. Then there's all the hiding and showing that I was talking about. Now, most people realize you can hide the project panel. You can hide the metadata adjustments panel, both of those. But there's more to it than that. First of all of those can be hidden and shown with one keystroke. Pressing W hides and shows the project panel. Pressing I hides and shows the adjustments, all of the inspectors. So once you get used to these shortcuts, you're never more than literally a single keystroke away from making things just vanish. But there's also two others. Pressing D will hide the control bar. Now, a lot of people don't use that control bar because it has the buttons that you use to like move forward and backward through the browser or to rotate. And there's really good keyboard shortcuts for a lot of that most of us use. So you can hide that completely and you gain extra space along the bottom of the screen. You can hide and show the toolbar. And so if you hide the toolbar and you hide the control bar and then you hide that project panel and inspector's panels, you've got a very clean, very minimal interface that lets you really focus on the images. And, you can size those thumbnails just the way you want. You can divide the space between the viewer and the browser. You can sort of parcel out that space however you want. You want a really big viewer and then just tiny little thumbnails. You can do it. Or you can press the V key, hide the viewer completely. Now you have just thumbnails. And you can crank those thumbnails up to like 512 pixels wide. So you can, a lot of photographers we're finding are really liking that. They'll just go through the thumbnails and they'll do their initial sort of filtering through their images using that. If you have a second display hooked up, of course, this is really perfect because as soon as you hide that viewer, Aperture automatically knows to put whatever you click on the second display. All of our dual display modes are really pretty powerful, but this works really great. Hide the viewer. Now you've got thumbnails on screen one, and whatever you click on displays full screen on display number two. Those are just some of the things. That's just the beginning. Then we can talk about some of the other options, the metadata and other things.
You know, when I'm working on a big shoot, it's interesting. Let's take a wedding, for example. So you're right. You know, once I have the project set up, I don't need the project pane anymore because I know what's going on. So that goes away, and I like to, you know, do my rating, you know, very early. So I like just to have as much real estate as I can. And it's really helpful when you're working with stacks and stuff, too, to have all that available. And then the other thing that I noticed that's really cool is that, for instance, if I'm doing a portrait shoot where I have mainly vertical oriented shots, then I like to have the thumbnails off to the left side so that I have the proper real estate for in view mode. And if I'm working with a lot of, you know, landscape, then I put the thumbnails at the bottom and go. And it's really funny. You know, once you sort of go, oh, yeah, I can do this. And like you said, it's just one keystroke away. It makes the whole process so much more pleasurable than, you know, sort of fighting the application, which is what, you know, we've done in the past.
Absolutely. By the way, the thing that you were just mentioning also extends to full screen, and I didn't mention that. But when you're in full screen view, now in full screen mode, you know, you don't have any of the other distractions, but you still have that film strip that you're using for your navigation. Well, a lot of people don't realize the film strip can be dragged anywhere. So when you're working with those portrait images like you were talking about, you can go ahead and stick that over on the left side as well. And all the navigational tools, your ability to, you know, zip through that film strip and jump to whatever image you want, that works just as well vertically as it does horizontally. So same idea, kind of set the system up the way it makes sense to you, and you've got a much more powerful tool. That alone makes the workflow go faster when you have a system that's set up the way you want.
Yeah, that film strip in full screen mode, and I don't remember the name of the command, but where you can have it stay out of the way of your image, that's a very handy command too.
Yeah, that's the avoid command, and it's Control V toggles it on and off, and I do toggle it on and off quite a bit depending upon what I'm doing. You know, if I want to be able to see my whole image and not have anything overlap it, then I'll turn that on. But if I'm going down to the film strip a lot, back and forth. The constant redrawing where it's avoiding the image, that can sometimes get in your way. So then just keep it on. The film strip will overlay the image, but you don't have any, you know, sort of reanimating. So again, it just depends on what you're doing. But if you get the keystrokes down so you can turn these options on and off really quickly, you can kind of make the app behave the way you want. And a lot of people don't know that you have the option of having it automatically avoid the image or not. Mm-hmm.
You're right. I actually go back and forth myself depending on what I'm doing because avoid can be annoying if you have to hit the film strip a lot. So how about metadata? You know, when, you know, Aperture has a couple different ways to display metadata in the grid mode, in the view mode, and so forth. You can set those up ahead of time, right, and then sort of toggle back and forth depending on what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is, I think, again, another really huge feature in Aperture that is often untapped is the fact that our metadata support is really deep. I mean, you have the ability to view and search by and create smart albums with, you know, virtually any of the EXIF fields or the IPTC fields. It's not just a select subset. I mean, you can dig way down deep into those and search by anything. In fact, you can even create custom metadata fields. So if there's one that isn't there, maybe a field to store, say, photographer's notes. Maybe you wanted to put notes in there that you don't want included when you export the image to JPEG or something like that. But maybe notes that someone else who is going to be working with these images on an Aperture system, you want them to be able to see those and know which images to work on or what kind of work to do on them. You can create that custom field in Aperture. Anyway, so you've got all of this depth, but for one of our philosophies in designing the product was just because there's dozens and dozens of metadata fields doesn't mean you really want to go through a list of all of those. There's certain ones that are relevant to you, and we can't decide which ones those are. So One of the things you can do is you can create these, what you were referring to, metadata views. You can design your own. You can pick the exact set of these three EXIF fields and these four IPTC fields, and maybe whether the image is online or offline. That's a field that you can display, and the file name and all of that basic stuff. You come up with that perfect set, and that's called a metadata view. You actually design that in the metadata inspector over on the right side of the screen. Once you've set that, you can then assign that particular set of fields to be the ones that are displayed in the viewer or in the browser or as a tooltip or in a list view. So you get to really choose. I mean, again, this is an area where a lot of times I see photographers who have been using Aperture for months, and everything that they've got on the screen is exactly as it came out of the box. They haven't changed any of these things. And if that's what you're doing, you're kind of missing the boat on the power here, because the idea is to tune these and come up with exactly the combination of metadata fields that you need to see so that you literally are never seeing irrelevant data on the screen. It's only the pieces that you want. And then you can toggle. You have your choice. You can set up two different views of metadata for the viewer, two different sets for the browser. So you can actually toggle between, say, a very metadata-rich view where you're overlaying, you know, all of the exposure settings and so forth versus one that maybe is just the file name and the rating, or maybe just the rating. So you have a lot of flexibility here. Dig in there, create these custom views of the metadata. And again, you're really saving time because you're not having to open up an inspector or scroll through anything to find the information that you want. And while we're on that subject, I want to just dig a little bit deeper into probably one of the other very seldom tapped power features in Aperture, which is the list view. So that grid of thumbnails with one click can be displayed as a list. Once you have the list, now you get to decide what's in that list based on these metadata views that we were just talking about. So of all of the dozens of different fields that are available, you get to pick whatever set you want. And once you display that a list view, it's a true column view. So you can literally just grab the column headers and drag them into any order that you want. So now you have a column view, the image name, and a little teeny thumbnail on the left-hand side. And then every column of data appears next to that in the order that you prescribe. And it's all sortable now by just clicking on the headers. So guess what? Aperture lets you sort your images by any metadata field, not just by the, you know, five or six that are in the sort menu by default. Any field can be used for sorting. All you have to do is go into that list view, click on the header, it sorts. And even if you go back into grid view, that sort order remains intact. So, you know, there's power there that people aren't tapping that gives you an incredible ability to sort of sift through these images. You can also use that list view, again, if you have a second display, you can have a list on one screen and then full screen images on the other. So you kind of get the best of both worlds, a full screen display and a quickly sortable list. And you can print the list, which a lot of people don't know you can do.
Yeah, that's actually really hot. So you could, for instance, sort your list by f-stop if you wanted to, or anything like that at all. And when you print the list, is there anything tricky there, or is it I've never actually set that up myself.
It's a what you see is what you get printing setup. So in other words, you would want to just size the columns and pick the order of the columns so that the ones that you want exposed will show up when you go to do a print, you know, based on your page size and your orientation. So it may take a little trial and error to come up with a set of fields that looks just right for you. But it is a printable list, which sometimes can be very handy. And remember, that sorting even works with the custom fields that I was talking about. So if I do have like studio notes or other notes that I've put into a custom field, I can filter and sort by those and then just print out a list of, say, all the images that need retouching that I want to work on tomorrow.
A couple of things I wanted to mention on the metadata views. One is I'm using Aperture more and more for teaching, and it's really a great tool because it's so flexible. So I have a metadata view that shows all the XF data when I'm in view mode so that students can see, you know, the f-stop and the shutter speed and the white balance setting, all that. Really handy stuff. And then the other thing, too, is that, you know, these metadata views are available to you when you're in output mode, such as building web pages and so forth. Boy, you can really build some instructive web pages that has exactly the metadata that you want, you know, especially when you click on the thumbnail and it brings up the view mode in the browser, and you can use those metadata views to display the type of metadata you want there. It's pretty fascinating stuff.
Yeah, actually, you've hit on a really good point here, which is, the whole philosophy behind our approach to metadata, displaying metadata. The idea is that you create these metadata views, and once you've made them, you can access them for the browser, for the viewer, as a tooltip, but then also as information that's displayed in a web gallery or in a web journal or on a contact sheet, so or in a book. So you'll find that by just defining these sets, you can kind of apply the same set of metadata wherever you need it. And the idea was set it once and then be able to access it from anywhere within the application. So it's pretty handy.
Actually, I wanted to talk about tooltips for just a minute, if you don't mind, because I think this is another function. I see some photographers use it a lot, and then I see some photographers that never hit the T key at all. And then I think a lot of people don't realize that this is also something that you can customize, so it's showing exactly the data you want and you know, not the other stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So in that same view options menu command under view, the view menu, that's where you would decide which set of metadata is going to be the set that appears when you hit the T key, which is the tooltip shortcut. And we give you one by default, and we call it tooltip, but you can change that. So if you want to have a shortcut so that you can just literally point to a thumbnail, hit T, and read the caption, you can create a metadata view that it consists only of, say, file name and caption, and then that's all that you'll get. So it's really up to you. The other thing to keep in mind with those, I love that, the tooltip ability to read the metadata. It's very handy. It's one of the most frequent ways I use to access any metadata, is that it updates live. So when you turn that on, you hit that T key and you get this little tooltip and it's floating right there under your mouse. If you move to the next image, let's say you've got multiple images in your viewer, that updates instantly. So you've got two images and you like the look of one more than the other, and you want to quickly kind of say, well, what did I do? What did I change? You know, which settings did I change between this one and that one? And you've got it right there to flick back and forth. And that works on thumbnails too. So one of the things that people are, you know, pretty excited about, sometimes we show them how you can just literally just point to these thumbnails. And as I run my mouse over the thumbnails, the tooltip is updating in real time, giving you all of the specs that you need about every one of those pictures without having to open them up even in a window.
It's a huge time saver. I know we're using it a lot. I have my library up and someone will go, well, what did you do on that shot? It's not a big deal anymore. I just hit T and you go, oh, okay. Oh, I didn't know you had 85, you know, F1.2. Yeah. And you go, yeah, well, that's how that, you know, that's how I got that bokeh effect in the background or whatever. But anyway, it's just really handy. And then you just hit T again and it's gone.
And by the way, all of this stuff that we've been talking about, I should point out, is particularly important if you are doing a lot of your aperture work on a laptop. You know, when you don't have that great 23-inch or 30-inch display with you and you're working on a smaller screen, particularly in the field, you know, one of the questions we get a lot is, you know, how do I make this work best on a laptop? One of the answers is, you know, you should definitely be taking advantage of all of these features that we just described to make the best use of that laptop screen. You know, hide the stuff that you don't need to look at. Move the thumbnails to the side. You know, pick a size and configuration that works well. And I'm telling you, when you do that, you end up with a very uncluttered, very clean-looking screen that makes field editing much, much easier.
I actually, when I work with a laptop, I actually have a field editing 3x5 card that has all of my keystrokes on there, so I can just refer to them really fast. I don't need it anymore because it stuck with me, but it was a great way, you know, just to work really fast when I work with a laptop. And I think it's absolutely necessary because one of the things that I'm learning when you're working with a laptop and you're printing is that when you're printing and you look at your image in full screen mode on a big screen, you can find out things that maybe you need to address before you put that big sheet of paper in. On a laptop, if you have your screen cluttered up and you're looking at a smaller version of the image, I found that I go through more paper just because I'm not getting as good a look at the image as I can. If I use all the area on the 17-inch, work in full screen mode a lot and all that kind of stuff, I'm having better luck when I'm outputting. Do you have anything else?
I've got one more, and it's because it's one of my favorites. And again, this is one of the undiscovered gems. So when you click on a project in that list of projects in your project panel, you see whatever content is in that project, right? Those are the thumbnails you get in the browser. What people don't realize is that you can, if you option click on a project rather than just click on it, instead of the browser just switching to the next project, it will actually split the browser. You'll actually have two side-by-side browsers. So you can do something that you really can't do in other applications. You can be looking at two completely separate projects side by side. So if you want to compare now pictures from this project with that project without having to display all your image, you know, you don't need to look at your entire library of images. You just want to compare project A to project B. They each stay in their own separate browsers, but they're side by side. Now, if you command click on another project, it will load that project into the browser in a separate tab. Anyone who's using Safari will be very comfortable with this. Each new project opens up in a different tab. So you can then click between the tabs and move between projects without having to open and close them separately. Again, once you get used to this, it's very powerful. It enables you to, if there are maybe two or three or four different projects that you're kind of, maybe you're compiling a book or a portfolio using images from a number of different projects, and you want to kind of swap between them back and forth a lot. Well, this enables you to keep each one of them in its own project while just flipping between them and just moving from tab to tab. So there's some really cool, there's a lot of documentation about this, you know, if you read the manual. But I've noticed a lot of people haven't explored how much you can do with this, the tabbed browser and the ability to split the browser.
You know, it was something that I didn't discover until 1.5. And once I discovered it, you know, I was really excited about it. And I blogged it on Inside Aperture. And someone wrote, well, I think this has been around since 1.1, actually, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been around from the beginning. But like I say, often not discovered. And there's a lot of flexibility to that, too. You can actually drag between, if when you split the browser, you can grab that little bar that separates them and then drag that to the left or to the right so that you get to decide how to divvy out the space between the two browsers. One of them can be in list view. One of them can be in thumbnail view. You can actually take an image that's in a project that's in one of the tabs. And if you drag that tab far enough to the right, it will automatically split the browser or add it to the other browser. There's a lot of file and project management power there that I think a lot of the world needs to still discover how much is there.
Fabulous. Well, Joe, thanks so much. This is great. In fact, now I think I'm going to fire up the laptop and do a little more playing around. We have some more things to talk about, and hopefully we'll be getting together real soon.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Derek.
The Inside Aperture podcast is produced by O'Reilly Media. To learn more about Aperture, be sure to visit digitalmedia.oreilly.com/aperture for articles, tutorials, blogs, and podcasts. This show is produced on a Mac using Soundtrack Pro. See you next time.